here with this wonderful story. It's used in stewardship sermons and everything else that you can possibly think of. But we forget sometimes to look at what comes before this text and what comes after it. When we look at those bookends, we understand a little more clearly what Jesus is up to in this gospel. Just before this text in the 14th chapter of Matthew, Jesus has received news of the death of his cousin John, John the Baptist. He had heard about the beheading of John the Baptist, all of what had happened with Herod and Herodias. Keep in mind, he knows and loves his cousin, and so he goes off in a boat to a deserted place by himself. And there he is, waiting. He's just praying and doing what you do when you grieve someone who you love. But there's no time for grief. The crowds heard that Jesus had moved off by himself, and they followed him from all of the towns. And it says in our text that he had compassion for them and cured their sick. What follows after this text is Peter wanting to follow Jesus out onto the water, and he sinks. These bookends find in their middle this wonderful story of the feeding of the 5,000. It's important to know those other two texts. First of all, that Jesus, in the midst of his grief, which we can only just imagine, finds within him a word in our English that says he had compassion for them. It's one of those few vocabulary words that has always stuck with me from school. The word from compassion, this esplegnethe, it's a wonderful word, means more than just he felt for them and then did something about it. The word is rooted in the word for guts, the splegna. The word means that it's often used to talk about how his gut was twisted and aching for them. And so he cures their sick. And again, he goes to a deserted place, and the hour is late. And the crowds, the disciples want to send the crowd away so that they may go to the villages and buy food for themselves. Those first two texts that I talked about, both Peter and the beheading of John the Baptist, remind me a little of a phrase that I heard a lot this week related to the funeral of Congressman John Lewis. He was often known to say, "There is good trouble." And this is good trouble. Jesus takes the troubling news of his cousin's death and turns it into an opportunity within himself for compassion, for splegna, for moving into the crowd and sharing the gift that he has. I think about the disciples as Jesus says to them, they don't need to go away. Yes, they're hungry and they want to move off into the village, but you feed them. You give them something to eat. Put yourself in that moment where you're out in the deserted place. There's no Safeway or Whole Foods nearby, and you've not happened to brought a truck full of food for 5,000 people, and your boss says, "You feed them. I imagine in my mind's eye the disciples all looking at each other saying, what did he say? Well, I think he said we're supposed to feed them. They're in trouble. They don't have the food that it takes. They didn't plan ahead. They didn't, my son-in-law is known for making spreadsheets, and they didn't make one before they went out to eat, before they went out to follow Jesus. Nobody got the coolers or anything else for a picnic, but Jesus simply says to them, give them something to eat. And like so many of us, they start out with the negative. We have nothing but just 5 loaves and 2 fish. Jesus takes this good trouble and he feeds the 5,000. His compassion extends beyond just curing the sick, but also he gives them something to eat. This is a tough story. This is one of those that I remember in one of my favorite sermons that I heard about stewardship. They used this text and they talked about how the church has to take just the little bit that they get and manage to do amazing things with it. And afterwards I talked to the preacher and I said, you just gave everyone the perfect excuse to give just a little less because they want to see a bigger miracle. You know, it's like, Jesus started with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Let's see how he does with 3 loaves and a guppy. It'll be great. What a miracle. But this good work, this amazing good trouble that Jesus brings is that he sits the crowd down and he feeds them. He blesses and breaks the loaves and gives them to the disciples. And they do, in fact, do exactly what he asks them to do. He feeds everyone. Maybe the world still hungers for what Jesus has to share. Maybe we also need to take on the good trouble of our lives. Maybe it is our calling to feed people not only with bread and fish and spiritual love, but justice. An equality under the law, equality in the workplace. Maybe that's the bread and fish that we're being called to share. Maybe this hunger in the world is something that we miss. We miss the fact that people are dying and being killed like John the Baptist. We miss that we're failing at our spiritual lives the way Peter felt like he had failed when he could not walk on the water to his master. Maybe sometimes we feel like Jacob, who gets up in the morning on his way to meet his brother Esau and ends up wrestling with God. I feel like that every day. And maybe our spirituality we think is supposed to bring us comfort. And maybe at its best, it is bringing us good trouble. One of the things I loved about John Lewis's funeral is how often they spoke about his willingness to stir it up so that people might get fed. His willingness to take on difficult situations and difficult people so that justice might come in places where justice was clearly and historically absent. He was even willing to wrestle with God, I think, and his faith that sometimes betrayed his ideals. So now we're being called to good trouble or God trouble. Maybe we also, like John Lewis, need to be a little uncomfortable. Maybe, like the disciples, we too need to be uncomfortable so that loaves and fishes become a feast. So that simple, tiny laws that do things like allow everyone to vote become the rule of our land, so that every person can participate. Maybe it's the good trouble that we're being called to, like Jacob, to wrestle with God and those in charge, to wrestle sometimes even with each other when it is uncomfortable, so that the vision of Jesus Christ can become reality in our time. And you know, we can't leave it up to bishops. We can't leave it up to the clergy. We can't leave it up to the choir. Because it turns out that Jesus is saying to us, just as he said to his disciples, look, you do the work. It's your work to do, together with all of those other folks. We can't leave it to the professionals. It is our work. I said a little earlier that the world is still hungry for what Jesus has to share. And we makers and believers of good trouble stand by people like John Lewis and Martin Luther King Jr. and Gandhi and so many others. For there is loaf and fish aplenty. And it is our work, looking up into heaven and blessing all of it, so that God's kingdom can come to reign today. And so we are called to the good work of God. And so we are blessed and energized and hopeful. And we no longer need to leave it to the disciples and Jesus to feed the world. It is for us to do. What blessed work. Amen. Our worship continues with the hymn of the day. It is "The Church of Christ in Every Age," ELW number 729. Please rise as you're able.